Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 project here on the Nerd Party. On today's show, it's a case of stop procrastinating, start articulating. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Come on, come on, come on, come on, as we do a little more conversation and a little less action, please, to review the latest A24 release, Come On, Come On. I'm your co-host, Dallas King, and with me, as always, is Lee Hutchison. Actually, that's not true. He could not make it. Sadly, he got held up in a meeting. So we have decided to go across the Atlantic, because joining us is a very special guest, live from New York. It's Monday lunchtime. It's writer and co-host of the Annapurnaverse. It's Billy Melissa. How are you?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to get Alex to take notes on introductions because that was so good. Oh my gosh. I've never felt so like special. Yeah, I'm good. It's 12:30.
I know it's you've gone from the blink of an eye to guest host on the A24.
Yeah, podcast. Step aside, Lee. I'm taking your spot. I'm not going back to the Annapurnaverse. Alex, this is my official resignation from the podcast.
Yep. You see, Lee, you snooze, you lose. It's essentially, I guess, what we've done is an official trade. So yeah. We win as the co-host of the Annapurnaverse.
Perfect.
From now on.
So, there you go.
There you go. So Alex won't feel completely alone. Nick, as I said, you know, you've been gracious enough to have us both actually on the Annapurnaverse on Signal, separate episodes. And we're here to return the favour. So, Billy, I mean, what first drew you to the films of A24? I mean, did you become aware of them as they're almost like a brand now in terms of film distributors in the US, but also now sort of worldwide, where any poor film distributor in the UK, if they release an A24 film, it's like, it's an A24 film. Sorry, entertainment film, or whoever is actually distributing Come On, Come On in the UK. I actually don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree. I so agree that they're like a brand. And I know people get really like touchy about that stuff, but I think it's very obvious when like it's an A24 film. I'm trying to think what the first... Do you know what? It could actually be 20th Century Women.
No way.
It might be 20th Century Women, which if it is, it's like a really full circle moment to be here today. it really might have been, because I saw that in 2017 and then Lady Bird came out later that year. Or maybe it was Moonlight, actually. I think it might have been Moonlight.
I think it started doing the circuits late 2016 and then it probably got released in the UK. I think it was at February, just around Oscar time. So
yeah, so I think those two films must have been the first two that I saw. But I don't think I realised them as like a brand, maybe until like Lady Bird came out.
Yeah, I think even for me, I think it was around about the summer that we got like Hereditary and First Reformed and stuff like that, that I started to really sort of take notice of them. That, but then that was 2018. It's like I was aware of like individual films, but I wasn't aware of them, but I actually kind of came. I'd actually went back and realized I'd actually seen a lot of A24 films. It was just everything sort of came together. They really sort of exploded, I think, after like the Moonlight Oscars and stuff like that. It was like everyone sort of stood up and took notice of this independent renegade
distribution so cool.
company that was, you know, taking huge risks. But I think you sort of starting with Moonlight in 20th Century Women, I think it means that having watched every single film in their back catalogue, you've missed quite a lot of the films which maybe weren't as high quality at the beginning as Spring Breakers, perhaps.
Oh, no.
For example.
I didn't get to that until really recently.
Yeah, and that's a quick plug for the episode of Spring Breakers on the Annapurnaverse, where we discuss a film which I think initially I was quite high on, and then retrospectively, given certain actors who are in it and certain plot lines. Not the best one.
Yeah, go and listen to that, because that was crazy. Do you know what? I actually wrote an essay about A24 during my undergrad. I just remembered.
Oh, did you? What was it about?
Well, we had to like pick a studio to write like kind of about their history and about... yeah, like what their identity was. And I remember picking A24 and like, I actually might have like come across your podcast while I did that. That might have been how like I crossed paths with you. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's A24 will be celebrating 10 years next year. So I think Lee and I have to do something special, a live podcast special or something. Need to do something to celebrate.
Yeah. You. Yes. Full support.
Even though, you know, we've never got anything from A24, like a free candle or anything. So
excuse me, you need to like
next year,
get so. Into their DMs and be like, send me that $60 screenplay book right now.
I know. I mean, they've made a lot of money out of me from the amount of merchandise which I've got. Although, of course, now that you're in New York, you don't have to pay international shipping. Amazing.
Yeah, well, the prices are enough to put me off on the. I want the 20th Century Women book, like, more than anything, and the Ladybird book. Ugh, it's Christmas soon though, so exactly, my husband's in the other room. Take notes.
He doesn't have to pay international shipping. It's fine.
Exactly. They should open a shop, and then they would have me. If I could go there and hold the things, it would be kind of irresistible to just like buy everything.
Just off Times Square.
Yeah. Oh, don't give them ideas. They don't need any more money.
Yeah, well, with the prices they charge, I think they probably could afford a shop in Times Square.
Definitely.
Because I actually, once in New York, I actually tried to go and find the office and then realized that it was basically just in an apartment building. So I was like, oh, I can't even see inside.
I wonder if they've had like an upgrade since then.
You would think, because I think that would have been at least 3 or 4 years ago that I went.
I'll go find out for you. But,
yeah, there are addresses on the website, so yeah, you can stop.
I'm just going to go stand outside and be like, look, you need to start dishing out some gifts to the A24 project.
Yeah, and if you've got any, you know, maybe slightly, you know, dog-eared copies of the screenplay books, I'll take them off you.
Exactly, yeah, the second-hand copies, I'll take them.
So, I mean, you've sort of mentioned 20th Century Women and Moonlight. So, I mean, what are some of your favourite A24 films?
Oh, I feel like so many of like my favourite films of all time are A24. So, yeah, definitely Lady Bird. That really changed like my perspective as like a female filmmaker. And also 20th Century Women just is one of my favourite films of all time as well. I can't help it. I love Mike Mills, hence why I'm here today. It's so stupid to say, but I just love everything they've done. Like, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, The Farewell, like, I'm trying to think of, but it's so weird because, like, off the top of my head, like, I could probably just list their entire filmography and then I'd be like, and all of those are my favourite films of all time, just because I feel like they bring such interesting voices to the film space that we just would not hear anywhere else. And then, like, therefore they get to jump off of that springboard and into bigger things like Greta Gerwig and Barry Jenkins and even Mike Mills, in a sense. I feel like this film is like the biggest thing he's done so far, almost, even though his other films are like really recognizable, but I feel like this one's really gaining traction, particularly in like the award circuit.
Yeah, because I mean, he's got a good track record at the moment, you know. Thumbsucker was very well received, you know. He took Christopher Plummer to an Academy Award in Beginners, got himself an Oscar nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay, maybe Best Original Screenplay, I mean, for 20th Century Women. And the latest film is Come On, Come On, and it's about Johnny, an emotionally stunted and soft-spoken radio journalist who travels the country interviewing a variety of kids about their thoughts concerning their world and their future. Then Johnny is saddled with caring for his young nephew, Jesse. Jesse brings a new perspective, and as they travel from state to state, effectively turns the emotional tables on Johnny. So, I mean, I guess for the rest of the podcast, I will be adopting the role of Johnny, because essentially I will be interviewing you about, I'm not going to ask you for your thoughts about the world and the future.
Oh, please don't. Not right now.
Mainly, I'm going to put you on the spot, but mainly just about the film itself. Now, I know that you saw it, I think, at the New York Film Festival. Was it within about 2 days or something of actually arriving in New York? It's like, I'm pretty sure that on Twitter, the first thing I saw you doing was basically collecting your press pass. It was like, I'm in, I've dumped my bags, I've got to go to a film festival, sorry.
That is literally so true. It was the first day that we got here. I went straight to, I was so tired as well, but I went straight, we weren't that far from like the Lincoln Center. So we went on the subway. I went and got my press pass and I was like, nothing is stopping me from seeing Come On, Come On. I think it was about a week after we landed, but the first film I saw there was Macbeth, and that was literally like 2 days after we got to New York.
Another A24 film, we'll have to have you back on.
Yeah. As well. So they are dominating the festival circuit this year.
So, I mean, you said, you know, you basically, nothing was going to stop you seeing Come On, Come On. I mean, what was it about that film that made you make it the first thing, one of the first things you did when on arriving in a new city, in a new continent, in a new country?
It's kind of fitting, like, in hindsight, but it was actually because I remember when they announced it in November, or no, I think it was September 2019, I put it on, like, my Instagram story. I was like, this is all I'm going to be talking about for the next year. And then we got to January 2020 and I was on a podcast and they were like, what film are you excited for this year? And I was like, Come On, Come On. It's the only film I want to see. Like, I'm so excited. And then it just kept getting pushed back because of everything going on. And then I think they did reshoots at the end of 2020 or at the beginning of 2021. And I was like, I'm never going to see this film. It's taken so long. And then after every festival, like, lineup announcement, I was just waiting to see, like, I was like, where can I go to see this? I will fly to Venice, I will fly to France, I will go anywhere to see this film. And then just as the stars aligned, I happened to be moving to New York in the first, well, it was at Telluride before New York, but no one's going to Telluride because it costs like $800 to go just for a ticket, let alone the flight to wherever the heck it is. And then, yeah, I saw it was at New York Film Festival and I was super early to the queue and there was like no one there. There was maybe like five or six people there, but I was like, I don't care. It wasn't even full though, like the screening wasn't full, not in comparison to how it had been.
You see, this is where your training of attending London film festivals did you in, by going, I've got to get there like 3 hours in advance, I've got to get there like 6:30, otherwise I won't get a seat. I see all the queues and stuff. And then New Yorkers are clearly just like, yeah, whatever, I'll just rock up 5 minutes before we finish.
Basically, what happened, I should have taken note by day 4 or 5, but even like when June was screening, which I wasn't even that excited to see, I was the second one in line. I was like, why am I here so early? Oh, honestly, it was worth it, though. It was worth waiting in the cold for, I think it was actually cold that day as well. And I waited for maybe like an hour and a half before the film started. But nothing, I mean it, nothing was stopping me from seeing it. At that point, I was like, I just need to see it. I need to cry. I need to let it out.
And I mean, was it possible that it managed to live up to your expectations?
Yes. So this is... Yeah, this is the thing, is I was really, really nervous when I heard the film was going to be in black and white, because I love Mike Mills's like love affair with colour. I think it makes his movies what they are. And so by the time I got to it, I was really nervous because I was like, oh, I've spent so long like waiting for this. If I don't love it, it's going to be such like a disappointment. But I don't know how I managed to love it even more than I anticipated. Like loving it. It's so, and I was like sobbing the whole time. My face was a mess by the time I come out. And then I walked home and like cried some more. Yeah, I was like that girl on the streets of New York walking with like a face full of tears. And like you had to wear masks in the festival. And so like my mask was disgusting by the end because of all of like the tears that had gone onto it. Oh, I bet I was looking a real treat after that screening.
I mean, everyone would have been in the same boat because, yeah, from what I've heard, yes, it's one of those sort of manly tears, ugly crying sort of films. And I mean, I've never cried at a film. Sorry, it's just not something I do.
What?
But I know.
We have to unpack that.
Weirdly, I think the closest I've ever come to was the end of Warrior. When Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy are fighting in the final fight, and they're brothers and they're all estranged, And it's like, but I don't have a brother. And it's like, there's also issues with the alcoholic father. And it's like, I don't have any dad issues either. It's like, why? I might say, you know, Tap, Tommy Tap. And it's just like, I mean, you have to watch Warrior. It's for me, it's one of the best sports movies ever made. And I think it's like, they use like the national at the end. And I think it's like, there's an orchestral version of it. And it's just, when that sort of kicks in, it's just like, the bottom lip starts to go. But no, I've never cried at a movie. Yeah, it probably says something horrible about me.
That's really interesting. I'm really interested to know more about that.
But you know, I mean, I really sort of I was able to still sort of connect with it. And about the sort of, it was surprisingly, I think, hopeful in a way that I wasn't expecting. And for me, it was easily sort of Joaquin Phoenix's most the warmest and most almost sort of collaborative giving performance I think I've seen, because I mean anyone who knows anything or has seen anything about Joaquin Phoenix and his performances and how he approaches films and stuff like that, he doesn't seem like the easiest person to get on with on set, and even in sort of Q&A's and stuff like that, he's incredibly sort of private person. So I don't know, it just seems that, I don't know how you felt about it, but it's like, I don't know if it was specifically Woody Norman or if it was just he connected to the script or something like this, but it seemed like a completely different version of him than I've seen before. And this is going back to the very beginning of the very first performance I ever saw him, when in Parenthood, where he was the shy, awkward kid who carried around a brown bag full of porn tapes.
Different role.
A completely different role. But yeah, this one was very sort of vulnerable, and yeah, I was just amazed at what I was seeing from him. I mean, what did you think of his performance?
Yeah, it's really interesting that you say that, because I was watching one of the interviews recently with him, and he said, well, Mike Mills said that Joaquin wasn't really gonna do it, and Mike wasn't gonna do it without Joaquin, and so he eventually like gave in and was like, if we find the right kid, like it will be a case of like, if we find the right kid, I'll do it. If not, like, I'm not going to participate. And then luckily they came across Woody Norman. But I think you're right in that, I don't know, I really love, I think I accidentally like fall in love with Joaquin's performances, because I really loved him in Her. I'm trying to think what else, like off the top of my head, what else I've seen him in. Even Joker, you know, you can't, the film is what it is, but like you can't really take away from his skill and talent as an actor. But I feel like roles like this and films like this are like what's made for him and what he does best, because I think he understands something about being human, and I think he fits into the world of like Mike Mills so well, in that he doesn't participate in like the celebrity world. He doesn't like to do the Q&A's. He is a bit socially awkward. I don't know, but does he have some kind of autism? I don't know if he spoke about that, or like Asperger's or something. I don't know if that's like speculation.
I've never probably said it, but I think it is.
Oh, maybe it was like people just making stuff up during like the Oscars one year. But anyway, either way, I feel like he's there for the work and is very interested in producing meaningful movies, which I think Mike Mills does so well. And so I feel like he brought out the best of him in this role. I could go on about it, but I love him in this film.
Yeah, because I mean the concept of the film itself, which is essentially almost like a road trip film where you've got that odd couple who, I mean, we're just past Thanksgiving, so I mean one of the best road trip or a couple of films of all time, Planes, Trains and Automobiles, where they don't get on initially, but then they eventually break down each other's barriers and they begin to form a real bond. Here, you know, you've got the uncle, and who's been thrown into the situation where he's forced to look after the kid. It's meant to be a couple of days. It then becomes a couple of weeks and stuff like that. And one of the interesting things that I thought of when watching the film was, this is like A24's sort of version of Uncle Buck in a way, where you know, you've got the uncle comes to stay and, you know, he causes a bit of chaos, you know, he's, oh, I'm gonna up sticks, take this kid to New York, we're gonna go on a road trip and stuff like that. And what I was amazed to find out, and I don't know if you know this, but this is an amazing bit of trivia. Have you seen Uncle Buck?
No, I haven't, I'm sorry.
Well, Uncle Buck, he basically comes over and he has to look after two kids. One kid is Macaulay Culkin, plays the son. And the daughter in Uncle Buck is played by Gabby Hoffman, who is the sister in this one. I was like,
oh my gosh, that's crazy.
I couldn't believe it when I found that out. Ross McLean on Twitter tweeted that out, and I was like, what? Because I'd actually written down Uncle Buck about half an hour before I saw that, just thinking that, you know, the parallels between the two films are interesting, but the fact that she played the kid in that one is now playing, you know, the mother in this one, I thought was amazing. And I mean, there's a lot can be made about, you know, family dynamics in films and stuff like that. And for me, Joaquin Phoenix and Gabby Hoffman probably play one of the most believable pair of siblings that I've seen on screen in a long time, probably apart from Donnie Darko, but then Jake and Maggie are actually brother and sister, so it's not that difficult. They just seemed like a natural fit, and I completely bought into them being sort of brother and sister. I mean, what did you make of that family dynamic?
Yeah, I so agree, but I will admit the first time I watched it, I was confused for a moment until obviously they like started talking about their mum. I was like, is this a relationship that's ended? Like, what's the... But then I was like, I knew that it was about him looking after his nephew, and I was like, right, so it must be his sister. But as it comes down to it, it was like that back and forth. And because they're each other's only siblings, like they don't have a third party to talk to. They have to talk to each other in this really honest way because they've been through these experiences together, and that they're the only other people who understand that. And so I feel like the script definitely aided them in their performance. But I agree. I feel like there is that like familiar dynamic, but also that like, oh, we spent a lot of time apart together. And it was like the back and forth over the phone. And to keep that relationship so strong and realistic when they're not really ever in the same room together, or like they spend most of the film apart, is really special.
Yeah. And I guess that brings us to the other person in this strange family triangle. And that's sort of Woody Norman as Jesse, who I think is sort of winning a lot of awards at the
as
moment,
he should
sort of best
as
youth
he
performance.
Should.
So I take it you're a big fan of this find by Mike Mills.
I was impressed, and then even more impressed when I found out he was British and his accent was...
Hang on, what? Wait,
he's British. He listened to him and he's got the most like London accent you've ever heard. Honestly, he is such a talent, and I think that he was the second kid that auditioned, so to just stumble across that, I was like, God handing down something so great. It was like, the world needs this film, I'm gonna give you this kid, he is so talented. Oh, it's one of the best performances of the year, let alone like best child performances.
I can't believe I didn't know that. I'm now sort of doing that face that Americans do when they discover like Christian Bale is American, or like Andrew Lincoln in The Walking Dead. It's like, if they hear you zoom, it's like, what?
Yeah, right after this, like, go to YouTube and look up an interview, and you'll literally, your mind will be blown.
What, is he proper Cockney?
Well, he's not Cockney. He's got kind of like a posh, like, London accent, but like, he is like full on, like, RP kind of vibes. And it's so weird because it's like, how have you got that, like, spot on accent, let alone all everything else that you're doing in that movie, having to focus on that? Like, even skilled adult actors can't do that. It's crazy.
Oh yeah, no, there's a lot of British people who struggle with American
and
actors,
vice versa, so. It's even worse vice versa.
it can be worse vice versa, but even like, they might attempt it, but I've noticed that certainly Scottish actors, naming no names, Ewan McGregor and Jared Butler, they can try and do an American accent, but as soon as they start shouting, it's impossible.
Yes, the shouting trips you off. It's hard, it's difficult.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. But I mean, there's a lot in his performance, which is, you know, he's there to sort of butt heads with him and stuff like that, and do that usual, you know, I'm just going to be an annoying kid and I don't really want you looking after me, where's my mum, blah, blah, blah. But then there's, you know, there's a lot going on with the family. You know, obviously the father figure is out the way, played by sort of Scoot McNairy, who's dealing with lots of mental health issues. And then even Jesse himself has got some weird quirks and tics, the sort of thing where he has a game with his mum where he pretends to be like a ghostly orphan or something, and then
It's
talks
my
about how he
favorite
died and
part
stuff
of the
like that.
whole
And like,
film. I love it.
is that your?
It's my favorite
And then it's
thing.
like Joaquin's like, "What do I do?" And she says, "Just go
She's like,
along with
just
it, you
go
know."
along with it. Oh
Just
my gosh,
like.
what are you even asking? Apparently, Mike Mills stole that from like a friend's kid. Like one of their kids actually does it. Yeah, so it's like
Yeah, I
fantastic.
mean, I think that's one of the best things about Mike Mills is sort of the way he's able to, I guess it's what makes his films so universal and appealing is how he draws on, you know, on specific moments from his life and then makes them, you know, universally acceptable to everyone. It's like, I think there's a quote somewhere says the was it the universality in the specific. The more specific you make something, the more accessible it is to everyone. It's like, I think with Eighth Grade, another great A24 film, I've always found that it's like I never went to, you know, an American high school or whatever, but and I didn't have social media when I was at high school, but I can completely still relate to her and her troubles of trying to fit in and being awkward and shy at these group gatherings and stuff like that. And it's like I think a lot of people, even yeah, you don't have to have gone to as long as you went to school, you can completely buy into her journey. And I think that's one of the great things about Mike Mills is you can still find something in the film, even though it might not be about your type of character, you can still find stuff in that which you can relate to, which I think is an amazing thing. Even especially with like 20th Century Women and stuff like that as well. So I mean, these guys, you know, they go on a road trip. I mean, I can be, I'm not, I cannot mention the fact that, you know, obviously the film is set for a large part in New York. It's filmed in black and white, got classical music. It does sort of hint towards, you know, comparisons with Manhattan, although thankfully this film has a slightly less troublesome relationship between the neurotic older person and the younger person. I mean, what was it like? I mean, having, I guess you've said before that you've always dreamt of living in New York, you're now in New York. How does it now feel seeing New York on the big screen? Whereas before it was like, oh, it's that place I've always wanted to go. And then when you go around New York, you can see all the places where they film stuff like Ghostbusters, Firehouse, and stuff like that. But now that you're a New Yorker and it's like, oh, big deal. Oh, they're filming a movie over there. Big deal. Happens all the time. I don't care.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I could cry just thinking about it, 'cause it was really difficult to watch it having just got like literally just got there. I was there less than a week when I saw this. And I remember just before I left, I wrote this in my review, that I asked my nephew. I have two nephews. Oh, don't, I'm actually gonna start crying. Just before I left, he basically told me that he wouldn't come and visit me because he hates planes. He hates flying on planes. And I was like, that's okay. I don't like to fly either. It's okay. And so like the fact that it was like about a nephew and like uncle relationship was just like, and then being in New York and being like, oh, this is my dream. This is another like funny quote from him, but I remember just before I left as well, I think it was like one of the last times I saw him, my mom was like, or he was telling me again that he wasn't going to come and visit, and my mum was like, oh, you know, it'll be fine, like you'll have to come see her. And I'm like, yeah, you like you have to follow your dreams. And he's like, you don't always have to follow your dreams. And I was like, oh, okay, we got like a deep thinker here. He's 9 years old, the other one is 6, and it's just so like it really felt emotional because it was like this is like a lifelong like dream fulfillment. And then seeing this film kind of like brought me back to thinking about my family and thinking about like me as like a child and like the things that I dreamed of and how I was like in the present, like living that dream that I'd always thought of. And then like going out into the streets that was like filmed on the other day, I saw it again the other day, it on Saturday, I think. And when I walked out, I feel like I was around the corner from Scar's Pizza. And I was like literally like on the streets on Allen Street, I think is where part of it is filmed. And I could see like the signs and I was like, oh my gosh, this is literally where they filmed it. And I've come to see this film in the area that they filmed it. And it was just like really, really surreal to be like, oh, like I fell in love with New York by watching film. and all these like romanticized versions of the city. Like, I know it has its problems historically and things like that, as every place does. It's hard to detach those two things. But yeah, no, there is something really like magical and kind of like mystical about being where they stood. And like, I did the same thing for Lady Bird. Like, I went to the church that she goes to at the end. It's kind of right by where I go quite a lot. And it's only like a few blocks down from where my university is. And so like going there and seeing it and being like, oh, she goes there when she arrives in the city and I'm here. Like, when I arrived in the city, it's just like doing all these things and attaching all like these memories to it is, yeah, I love New York more than ever. Like, getting to be a small part of its history is really, really special.
I bet you go to that church every time you want to phone your mum, don't you?
Oh my gosh, don't. I can't, it makes me so emotional. Like, it's a really beautiful community because when I was there last, they had like a yard sale out on the front garden, and they were like doing these like community things. I was like, this in the middle of New York, it's right by Washington Square Park, it's on like Fifth Avenue. How is this like so intimate and small inside of this massive city? It's so like, I know why she chose that church. Like, I just understand, like, she must have been going through something when she went there, when she moved to New York.
Yeah, I mean, I've written a book on New York film locations. I've been, I think I went 10 years in a row from like 2009 to like 2018. And I really want to go back. I can't wait to get back.
Come and visit. There's a sofa for you anytime.
Thank you very much, because yeah, no, it's just, it's, I've been meaning to get back, but obviously COVID,
yes, yeah, I'm praying that that's holds off for a little bit longer because my parents are coming soon.
But have you been to Scar's Pizza? Have you had a slice there yet?
No, I'm like temperamentally really intolerant to pizza sometimes, so I'm like really careful about when I choose to have it, which is so frustrating. But I want to walk by it.
I'd say just have a slice, but the slices in New York are huge.
Oh, don't.
They're like a normal size
pizza.
Honestly,
there's one on my road, and that was like the last one I had. I hadn't had it for about a year. And then I had it recently, and it was not good for me. So I'm just going to stay away from pizza for a while. But I want to at least walk by it and like look at it.
Yeah. Because I was confused, because it's like when the t-shirt went up, and annoyingly when Storm Arwen hit over here, I was busy taking everything that was not nailed down in my garden and putting it in the garage. And then when I found out, when I saw the tweet, I was like, oh, I've missed it. And I was gutted because I really wanted one. And I was like, oh, it's Scar's Pizza, because I actually thought it was called Sean's Pizza. And it was just like the style of the thing. But so I was very confused when it said Scar's.
Like, who's Scar? Sean's. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's like what the guy from Lion King's doing. That doesn't make any sense. But yeah, no, I mean, I can't wait to get back to New York. And yeah, I mean, we could completely just turn this into just a How Awesome Is New York podcast.
Let's do it.
Do you like seafood and stuff like that? Or
no, I'm vegetarian.
Are you big seafood? You're vegetarian,
yeah,
so you can't.
Sorry.
Oh, well, then I would have said Jeffrey's Grocery in the West Village, but they do very good wine.
Oh, I don't drink either.
You don't drink either? I don't really either, but my wife does. And that's her favourite place to go for oysters and stuff like that. But I will send you a list of lots of other places.
Please do. I'm still learning. I've got my like places that I love and that I go to frequently, but I need to get outside of that bubble because I haven't been when I saw Come On, that was like the lowest I'd been in the city. I need to go like right down to the financial district and things. I've kind of stuck in like Midtown, East Village, West Village.
Oh, no, I like East Village and then sort of Lower East Side and stuff like that. Those are my favourite places. But again, this is just becoming the New York podcast. I mean, what you were saying earlier about sort of speaking to your nephew, I mean, it sounds like Johnny should have interviewed him for his views on the future. It sounds like he would have got some really interesting stuff about that. But I mean, it's interesting because obviously one of the main sort of themes, which sort of where the title of the film also comes from at the end, is about how Woody's, you know, worried about Joaquin Phoenix's character says, you know, you won't remember this. You know, it's just a small event in his life. And I was thinking, it's like, that might have been true for, like, Johnny's generation. But obviously, we're able to capture so much more these days on social media, on phones. I mean, we're having a conversation before we started recording about how we, you know, almost use Facebook as our digital photo albums because we don't get to print them out anymore. We don't go to Boots or a chemist and get them printed out a week later and find out they're all unusable anyway. You know, you've got that instant memory and then you store it somewhere and then hopefully, you know, the cloud doesn't die and you lose it all. But it's like with the ability to record stuff more, and that's what Johnny does. He's basically recording something for his nephew to play back later on and be able to remember these memories. I mean, you're a filmmaker yourself. I mean, how important is it now? I mean, how do you feel now sort of from growing up to being able to capture memories and being able to tell stories and stuff like that? I mean, how important is it for you to capture these moments in life?
It's like the most special thing in the world. I think that line that you quoted, it was the thing that like ruined me. Like I had been crying on
that's,
and off.
That's when the mascara and the tears.
Oh yeah. I had been crying on and off for like the whole thing. But that is the thing that like took me out into the streets and completely wrecked me, because it's so true. Like, I know that we have these like things to capture things, and like I can look at pictures of my childhood, but I don't remember the feeling. Like, I don't remember being there. I don't remember the whole day. I don't remember what happened. But like, I have days with my nephews that I remember entirely from start to finish, and like they will get older and they won't remember those things. And like, you ask them things even now, it's like, oh, remember when you did this or you said this, and they're like, no. And it's just the most like heartbreaking but sweet thing about being like a human, is we will remember certain things, and certain things will stay with us and they will shape us. And then like, even the things that we don't remember, like, sure, maybe he won't remember that time, but it will still shape him as like an adult as he's growing, because it's like, so how could you not, like, going on that trip with your uncle, like, how could that not completely change your life? And I think, yeah, as a filmmaker, like, that is the thing that I'm really drawn to. I love, and I think it's why I connect with Mike Mills' work so much, is like the truth in like exactly what you're saying about the universal specific thing of being human, these like emotions that we gather, and like it helps us feel seen. Like we can understand ourselves better through seeing film. And I think that that's like why I'm drawn to it as a medium, because you couldn't tell me someone in your life who has never seen a film, or at least I hope you can not tell me. It's like that universal thing that everyone goes to. Like, my mum goes, my dad goes, my sister, my brother, my nephews, I go, my, like, everybody in my life loves film. And it's because of those, it's just such a unique medium. It's like, not everyone has been to the theater, not everyone has, like, well, I guess music has the same quality, but like, not everyone's been to an art gallery, not everybody like connects with art in that same way. But like, film is like the long-standing medium that we will always, always come back to, because it is just so powerful. And I feel like, as a filmmaker, I feel really responsible with that, as in like, you could shape someone's mind, like, even if it's like a small film, you could shape like one person's mind and they could come away with a completely different perspective on something. And I think that like, just what Mike Mills does is exactly like, I want to take everything that, like, every film he's made, I'm like, I wish I made that movie, like, and I couldn't, because it's his experience. And like, I'll make movies in the future and he wouldn't have been able to make them, and like all of my other favorite filmmakers, they wouldn't have been able to tell the story that way. And it's like why the director is so important as well, or and even the writer, because I feel like we overlook the fact, I don't know, it's always when people, there's like always that discourse online is like, oh, this filmmaker would have made this film better or whatever. And it's like, no, like they couldn't have, because it's so specific and it comes from the mind. But I'm going to stop talking now because I could go on for ages.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because it's the amazing thing about film is, it's how everyone can have a different opinion of it. You know, you'll see people who probably didn't really like Come On, Come On, Come On, or, you know, Spring Breakers, you know, you might have an initial reaction to it, and then some people just absolutely loathe it, but some people might find some things that they like about it. Or it could depend on just the mood that you're just going into the cinema that day. Or there might be, like, because you had that conversation with your nephew going into Come On, Come On, you probably had a completely different reaction to someone else who, you know, was going to see the film. It's amazing how film can affect people in different ways. And I mean, I've grown up watching films, but you know, I've become a sort of critic of podcasts and stuff like that because I've wanted to talk about movies that have a connection to me. I mean, sort of growing up, there was like I've taken things on from movies like Almost Famous. I was like seeing that and like maybe not the sort of band style, but I was like, I would want to, that film made me want to write about movies that I loved. High Fidelity, I have in my darkest times done my DVD collection but in autobiographical order, which is takes a long time, but it's incredibly rewarding in the fact that, you know, if someone, you know, asked me to say, oh, have you got Alien, I'd be like, ah yes, well I watched that as part of the 500 greatest films of Empire Challenge, which I did, and I watched that in Brighton on a certain date, so I would be able to go into the 2009 column, blah blah blah, and be able to find it. And it's like, it's that kind of
that's thing. Incredible, you know, oh my goodness.
And it's like, and you find yourself in films, it's like watching Scream, it's like with Randy doing all the rules about the movie and stuff, it's like, oh, that was me. And it's like, and I'm really upset I still never actually managed to get a job at Blockbuster Video or my local one, Video Drive, and it's like, that was my dream job and I never got
it. Well, who's laughing now? It's you.
I ended up working as the manager of a cinema for 13 years, so you know, I got the next best thing, wasn't it? So I mean, I think that almost feels like a lovely point to almost end on, in the fact that it's, you know, film can, you know, move people, it can, you know, inspire people. This film, you know, there'll be people seeing it who maybe want to do something in terms of journalism. You know, he's speaking to all these kids and it's impossible not to feel sort of hopeful and warm at the end. I think a few people have described it as just a nice warm, almost bear hug of a movie. And that, you know, you could be feeling down, but you go and see a film like this and you can't not feel better and slightly more hopeful about the state of the world. Because, yeah, there's a lot of terrible things going on at the moment. But seeing, you know, how hopeful, you know, the children are that they interview in spite of everything that's going on, particularly, you know, the scenes where they're in New Orleans, where the Hurricane Katrina and all the storms and stuff had hit, they still have a positive outlook on life and believe that they can make the world a better place, and it's nice to see that. So I mean, in summing up, I mean, how would you pitch people to, you know, Come On is out, and I think it's a rollout release in the US at the moment, isn't it? It's sort of out in the UK at the moment. I mean, how would you try and get people to go and see Come On when it gets into theaters near them? I said theaters, not cinemas, because I'm trying to make it more American. So.
They're rubbing off on you. Oh, it's so cliche, isn't it? But it's like the film that we need right now. And I feel like I've said it a lot before I saw Come On, but I won't say it again because this really is the film that we need like right now, just because it's been a tough year. Everyone in the world will have been touched by what has gone on over the last few years. Like not even just with COVID, with governments, with protests, with so much. And like, it has reminded us just how interconnected we all are as people in the world and how we need to be caring and taking care of one another as well as ourselves. And I feel like there is not a single filmmaker who does this better than Mike Mills. And it's because I know people say it's not really necessarily a luxury, but I feel that like it is a luxury that he gets to do these small scale projects in a way that are so true to him, that there's no interference anywhere else. And so it's a very human story, and I think that it would be very hard for people to come away from it not feeling like we're gonna be okay, things are gonna be okay. It's horrible, there are so many horrible things that we could just center ourselves and focus on, but like exactly what you said about the kids specifically in New Orleans and in all the places, like,
or New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, perhaps. Sorry. There's also a kid. I feel like he's also in New Orleans, New Orleans. Oh, gosh, I'm going to be so self-conscious about that from now on. He's, like, talking about something so personal. And, like, those kids were unscripted. It's, like, those are all things directly from their minds. Like, they're not things that Mike Mills gave them to talk about. They just happened to want to say those things and tell those stories. And I hope that we're coming into a generation that's more honest and they feel like they can express themselves and there's no repression of like emotion, regardless of gender, and things like that. I really feel like this captures a moment, and when people watch this in like 50 years time or even like 20 years time, will remember this moment. And it's not about like, he's not asking them to talk about these specific topics. He's literally just like, how do you feel about the future? Like, that's such a broad question. And for most of them to be like, oh, I think it's going to be okay. It's like, okay, well, if it's going to be okay for them, it's going to be okay for us. I hope. I believe that with my whole heart. We're going to be okay. And the bad guys will go away eventually.
A beautiful note to end on. Although one other point, I take it you'd be happy for Mike Mills to complete a hat trick of films with A24 then, given that they basically are allowing him to make the films that he wants to make.
I want him to make as many films as he wants to make, but it takes him, he takes his time with it, and that's what I respect. I like that he doesn't rush into making projects, and that these come from moments in his life. Like, this was inspired by him giving his child a bath. And like, just from that, like, we got this beautiful movie out of it. It's just, I can't wait. I want to see everything that he's going to do. And I hope that the world gives him the gift of being able to do more movies. So A24, if you're listening, just keep putting the money in his pocket, please.
Absolutely. And we'll be back on the A24 project in the next couple of months with some more new releases. We'll have The Humans, we'll have The Tragedy of Macbeth, and we'll have The Souvenir Part 2. But Billy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and I think you've convinced me to give Lee the sack. I think we'll give him the hee-ho, and we'll just have you on from now on. So yeah.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. And having you and Lee on the podcast, we learn so much from you both. And it's been an honor to come onto the A24 project, especially because I love A24 so much.
You are now welcome back anytime. You've got a free pass now that you can
don't, because I'll come back every week.
But we'll be back soon with more films from A24. But thanks for listening. And come on, we're out. Bye-bye.